program adapted from Alcoholics Anonymous. More than 1 million people have recovered in AA. Most of them are just as hopelessly addicted to alcohol as we were to drugs. We are grateful to AA, to the AA Fellowship.
Keep eating, man. You're saying the right thing, man.
We follow a program adapted from Alcoholics Anonymous. More than 1 million people have recovered in AA. Most of them just as hopelessly addicted to alcohol as we were to drugs. We are grateful to the AA Fellowship for showing us the ways of the new life. The 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous as adopted from AA are a basis of our recovery program. We have only broadened their perspective. We follow the same path with a single exception. Our identification as addicts is all inclusive in respect to any mood-changing, mind-altering substance. Alcoholism is too limited a term for us. Our problem is not a specific substance. It is a disease called addiction. We believe that as a fellowship, we have been guided by a greater conscience and are grateful for the direction that has enabled us to fill upon an already proven program of recovery. Thank
you. My apologies for that, family. Again, I'm Gail, and I'm an addict. And I'd like to welcome you guys to the Keeping My Side of the Street Clean workshop. And for our first speaker, we will welcome Ben T. from the Washington, D.C. area.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Ben, I'm a recovering addict. And I'd like to thank God for allowing me to be here, alcohol and drug free and not in jail. I got here by the way of Alcoholics Anonymous. My clean date is June the 10th, 1981. And I'm a product of St. Elizabeth Hospital. My grandmother, when she put me out for the last time, it was like my whole life just kind of, shot past, my mind, and some of the thoughts were, I was 19 years old. I had six daughters, no education, no skills, running in and out of jail, that wasn't, something that I was proud of, and I felt real bad about that. And especially about not having any education, because I had the opportunity to get education just like anybody else. But my spirit was so damaged, as a child, how I developed stuff, I felt ashamed most of the time, I really, in my heart, I really didn't want to come up here and share, I'm not an out front guy. I don't like doing this kind of stuff, but I know if I want to stay clean or keep some sort of sanity, I got to do what I need to do, just like I had to do what I had to do to keep from being ill, but being up on in St. Elizabeth Hospital, first I went to detox. After my grandmother had put me out. And the guys that was over in detox, they suggested that, when I go down to Aquan this time, to call back up to St. Elizabeth Hospital and see if they had any beds open. And I did. Because death is waiting on you. I was walking dead because I was real numb. I was always on the outside looking in. It felt real bad watching people enjoy their families, and knowing I had a family, but I couldn't enjoy them emotionally. you know. And when I got up on that ward, you know, before I got up on the ward, they interviewed me, you know, and they asked me how could they help me, you know, and I told them I wanted to know who I was and what my purpose in life was, because I had long lost a purpose, you know, and they went in this room, and they stayed in about 6 or 7 minutes, you know, and they came back out, and they told me that I was mentally lazy, irresponsible, trifling, and dishonest. I had heard some of them characters, you know, that's what they used to tell me, some of that stuff in my household, because I never wanted to do nothing. You know, because I had a lot of resentment for adults. You know, now mind you, I told you I didn't process stuff too good, you know. And it was little stuff like, you know, I didn't find out I was a Santa Claus until I was about 7 years old. You know, when most of my peers, you know, they took it with a grain of salt. You know, but I took it to heart because, you know, you tell me you don't lie, but you lied to me. You know, now that's how I processed it. You know, and when my cousins burned to death in the fire, you know, and on my grandmother's side, you know, the family, you know, they told me God took them to a better place. So in my mind, I'm thinking, well, why God had to set them on fire to get them there? You know, one more time, I'm building up resentment for adults. You see what I'm saying? But I don't know I'm doing this. You know, I didn't find out about all this kind of stuff until I took my fourth step, you know. But anyhow, you know, when my father left, because I, you know, I would be getting set out every 60 to 90 days, you know, and I never got a chance to bond with people in my neighborhood, you know. And for the first 9.5 years, I was the only child, you know, so I had been already, at 8, I had already started my tour to the Seed Home. When I was 11, I was down in Law, Maryland, you know, and I took a break, you know, for a minute, and then I started going to the jails. You know, by the time I was 17, you know, I got married when I was 17. I had to forge my ID, you know, because my mother said she wasn't going to sign for me to be married. And my girlfriend was getting ready to have her second baby, you know. So it was a lot of confusion going on in my head. But I was, you know, I was always on the move, you know. I couldn't keep still, you know. But being up on that ward, you know, that's when my life started to take on a new part of my journey, because they tore me down up there, and then they told me to come out and go to meetings, you know. And by this time, you know, it wasn't but three NA meetings in the city, you know, when I came around. And we was operating off the little white book, you know, and we was white knuckling this thing, because it was a whole lot of characters in it that wasn't, you know, I mean, you had guys telling you literally what you gonna do and what you ain't gonna do, you know. And I'm kind of one of them kind of people, you can't talk to me any kind of way, you know, during that time, you know. But, you know, now, you know, I'm milling out, I'm older, you know. Y'all taught me a lot of, you know, a lot of ways to cope with my little emotional feeling. You know, I don't know. And that's another thing, you know, my mind is always jumping. You know, you know, for, you know, and plus I need to say this because I think I'm cool, for real. You know? But, you know, on the inside, you know, that's just, you know, something that, you know, I feel about myself. You know, it really ain't for nobody else, you know. But, you know, when I got myself out there, you know, then I had to tell the truth about how I really feel, you know. Because, you know, it don't feel good, you know, staying up, you know, can't remember, you know, stuff that happened in your life, you know. And just like a guy just, you know, before I came in this meeting, he reminded me, you know, about my ex-wife bought a monkey. And we were smoking, you know, angel dust. And I gave the monkey a shotgun, and the monkey hung himself, you know. But now, and you know, I don't know whether it's in the fourth step or the fifth step, but, or it could be in the sixth step, because I don't remember all that stuff, but I just know that it says something about my motives. It's always been about my motives for doing stuff, you know. And the reason why, I mean, I didn't consciously think that if I blow this dust in his face, he was going to kill himself. But my motives for doing it was because I was jealous, because my wife was giving this monkey more attention than she was giving me. So, you know, so you know, when he hung himself, I didn't feel guilty or nothing, you know. No, I didn't, you know. But, you know, those just are so many things, you know, I did in my active addiction, you know. And and before you know, a lot of this stuff started taking place, you know, I was having sex with a lot of women. And then when I got in recovery, you know, my life started to take on a new twist. So y'all told me that I had to change everything, you know. And when I got in another relationship and I got married for the second time, and I was trying to practice these principles the best of my ability, you know, my second wife, the stuff that I was doing to my first wife and to other women was being done to me, you know. So I wasn't handling it too good, you know. Because I beat her up on five different occasions, you know. And that was, you know, part of my moment of truth where I wanted to stay in that, because it was like the police was over there, the guy selling dope was over there, and the liquor store was over there. And the thoughts that came to my mind, are you going to go in them rooms and tell them people you doing the same kind of stuff you was doing when you was used? You know, and just like I'm looking around the room, because I'm really trying to catch these women's faces, see this nigga's crazy, you know. But, you know, I said I'm going to go to the meeting, and I'm going to tell them, because I ain't want to die. You know, that's what kept coming to my mind. I ain't want to die, you know. And I went in that meeting, and usually, during back then them times, it was dominant men being in the meeting, you know. But this particular day, it was just about all women in there. And I was looking around just like I'm looking around right now, you know. And I raised my hand and I told them I just beat my wife up. And them women were one side of me and down the other. But the only thing about that is when I left out of that meeting, they did not leave me down. And two ladies mainly, they literally made me get in their hip pocket. You know, and they taught me how to start respecting women again, you know. I went to see my granddaughter. I went to my see my granddaughter being born. I went to the Lamar's classes, and that was another thing that helped me, you know, change my way of thinking, how I view women, you know, because I was raised by 8 women, you know, and I was watching all that stuff that they was doing to their boyfriends and husbands, and in my mind I was telling them, they ain't doing that to me. I'm not taking all that, you know, but I'm here to report same stuff they went through, I went through, you know, and you know, it's been a real fascinating journey for me, you know. I like to sit up and say that I work a real fine-tuned, you know, program, but I don't, you know, because my main thing is fear. I don't like talking about fear. I don't like the taste in my mouth when I say the word, you know. But I've gotten in 2 fights within the last 2 years, you know, on my job. I could have lost my job. A lot of things could have happened, but for the grace of God, it didn't, you know. And because I was afraid, you know. And I had to come in and, you know, and do what I'm doing now, you know, tell people, you know, my attitude still kind of messed up, you know, and not feel ashamed about it, you know. But what really caught my attention is I didn't feel no remorse about what I'd done. And when I got home that night, you know, the thought came to my mind, how you snap like that? You could have used just like that, you know, and that's what scared me, you know. So I'm real mindful of, you know, when I get this fear, when I feel like I'm being threatened, you know. I didn't, and it was so bad, you know, that morning, when God woke me up, I had prayed, I read the 11th step, you know, I went to a meeting, and when I got to work, they told me that they was going to pay me for my overtime that they took away from me. So I had every reason to feel good, you know. I ain't see it coming, but when he pushed me, you know, I brushed it off. But when he came back and pushed me again, it was too late. You know, I mean, I did what I do, you know. And I'm just saying the mindset, you know, of my behavior. A lot of times I don't, you know, wait it out. Somebody say wait and count to 10, you know. Say the serenity prayer. Those were the farthest things from my mind, you know. So, you know, these are things that go on in my life today and getting to the other side. I just share this too, you know. Most of the guys that got clean around the same time I got clean, you know, kind of laid back. You know, what really keeps me, you know, more grounded than anything? The new person. They think that I be helping them, but they don't know. They be curing me. You know, I mean, they force me to do the right thing. You know, because I don't want to be a bad example all the time. You know, I know how to walk around and people always saying something negative about you, about my character. You know, whether it be in my household or be in the street. You know, they never really had nothing good to say about me, you know. So in here, you know, this program is priceless to me. You know, I ain't going to just deliberately go out and do what I want to do now because y'all have given me a conscience, you know. And sometimes I don't like that, you know. But for the most part, I really try to practice these principles in most of my affairs. I ain't going to say all of them. You know, but most of my affairs, I really try to practice these principles because I don't want to die, you know, because I know that I ain't going to just OD if I go out and shoot some dope. The first thing gonna happen to me is I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna start fucking with them young boys child taking their shit. They gonna knock this other out. You see what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying? And then I'm gonna go in, cause the reason why I'm saying this because a guy that came around the same time I did, both of us had one eye, both of us was angry and bitter, you know, and he chose to go back out. And he went out there messing with them young boys. And they knocked his other out. And he died in a nursing home. You know. Now I like to sit up and tell you, you know, that I really learned from that. But every so often I'm in collision with a young boy. Now I don't know what that's all about. I'm doing some research on that, but you know, I don't know what that's all about. You know, but I know I don't want what happened to him to happen to me. Cause it's waiting. It's waiting. You know, I don't care nothing about, you know, my attitude or none of that. You know, all this saying, yeah, the day we gonna get your ass. You know. So I pray a lot, you know. It's about time then. You know, but I really love Narcotics Anonymous. This is the only thing that I've ever committed to and stayed all the way up until this point. You see what I'm saying? It's a day at a time with me now. I really understand the value of a day at a time. Because I can overwhelm myself thinking about, you know, just like God has allowed me to purchase a home. And I don't have the money to do what I really want to do to it. But every time I think of a new idea, it overwhelms me. You see what I'm saying? And then when I go to work the next day, I'm tired, you know, because I've drained myself trying to figure out ways and means to get money to do what I want to do. And then when it don't come off, you know, I'm drained. You see what I'm saying? I'm doing that to myself. Ain't nobody in the house but me. You know, ain't nobody talking to me but me. You know? So, you know, these are kind of things that I do to myself, you know. And but if I don't tell nobody, you see what I'm saying, you know, I break my body down, you know, I get sick, I can't go to work, you know. I mean, just the whole, you know, this disease don't care, even if just for 1, 15, 10 minutes, if I can get you miserable, you know, it'll settle for that. You know, that's what it does for me. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, I'm more mindful of what I'm doing with my life today than I've ever been in my life, you know. And I'd like to thank Narcotics Anonymous for what y'all created, because y'all made me, you know, for real. You know, y'all are teaching me how to live, and I'm getting better at it. Thanks for letting me share.